This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhibi in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, a suicide bomber killed at least 30 soldiers and wounded scores more in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. And a civilian airplane crashed after taking off from an airport in eastern Sudan yesterday. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Citing two military sources, Reuters reports a suicide bomber killed at least 30 soldiers and wounded scores more inside a military academy in Somalia's capital Mogadishu today in an attack claimed by the extremist Al-Shabaab militant group. A military campaign launched by government forces and allied militiamen last year has forced the Al-Qaeda-linked group from large swaths of territory in southern Somalia, but the militants have continued to stage deadly raids in recent weeks, with the military campaign against them stalled as the army prepares a second phase of the offensive. Al-Shabaab fighters have stepped up their attacks. In late May, they killed at least 54 Ugandan peacekeepers at a base south of Mogadishu. They laid siege to Baidoa, one of the country's largest cities, for nearly 2 weeks, and they have staged a series of raids in Mogadishu this month. The bombing on Monday targeted the Jail Siyad Military Academy. The victims hailed from the lower Shabelle region and had come to the capital for training, said Captain Ali Farah, who knew some of them. He said he was aware of 10 deaths so far. As the Sudan conflict enters its 100th day, the UN Refugee Agency is calling for an end to the fighting amid major concerns about the rapidly escalating numbers of displaced people fleeing the country. The UNHCR says more than 740,000 refugees have found harrowing conditions in neighboring Chad, the Central African Republic, Egypt, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. The World Food Programme says the ripple effects of Sudan's war are compounding the problems of hunger and migration across West and Central Africa and quickly depleting already scarce resources. The humanitarian group says it needs immediate support to maintain peace and stability in Western Central Africa. Zahoun Sadi Majiangar, World Food Programme's Regional Communications Officer for Western Africa, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that the World Food Programme personnel are working round the clock to respond to the needs of desperate people, most of whom are women and children fleeing Sudan and crossing into Chad.
We have over 330,000 Sudanese refugees having fled insecurity, having fled violence in Sudan to find refuge in Chad. And this has happened in a matter of only 3 months. This, in addition to another 600,000 people, over 500,000 refugees already hosted in Chad for so many years. So this is creating, it's putting a lot of pressure on everyone, on the humanitarian actors, on the host communities, because they have to share the little resources, the already scarce resources they have, with the new arrivals. And that's the situation. In the face of this unfolding humanitarian situation, the humanitarian actors, including the World Food Program, is facing an acute funding gap to respond to the increasing needs.
So your executive director was there recently on the border, and she said in a statement today that it's just the funding simply isn't keeping pace. What is WFP asking for?
Well, right now, in order for WFP to be able to adequately meet the food and emergency nutrition needs of the new arrivals for the next 6 months, we need over $157 million US dollars. This is what we need to basically respond to to meet the essential, the basic needs of those fleeing conflict in Sudan.
How many refugees are we talking about from Sudan that you're dealing with now on the border in Chad and just, you know, and then they're filtering out into the country? How many refugees are we talking about?
Right now, the new refugees from Sudan are over 330,000 people who have fled Sudan between April and now. And most of them are living in the Adri region near the border with Sudan. There is a spontaneous site with over 130,000 people near Adri. So these are the people we are talking about. But in addition to those new arrivals, so the 330,000 people recently arrived, we have also over 600,000 people already. These are refugees from Central African Republic, from Sudan, and from Nigeria. All these people put together make Chad the biggest host of refugees in West Africa.
You already had problems in Chad, and then this is now just being compounded by these hundreds of thousands of people who are in desperate need of help. How do you figure out, you know, with the funds that you have available right now, how do you figure out how to help people who are in desperate need of help?
We are obliged to choose who to feed. So, for instance, we, WFP, plan to feed over 2 million people this year, but due to funding constraints, we are not even in a position to feed half of them. So what we do is we can't feed everybody. So we have to focus on the people who are really in desperate need. And these are the newly arrived refugees, women and children, and these are people we focus on right now.
Zahun Sarima Jiangar, WFP's Regional Communications Officer for Western Africa. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from Dakar, Senegal. The Sudanese military says a civilian airplane crashed shortly after taking off from an airport in eastern Sudan Sunday, killing 9 people, including 4 military personnel who were aboard the plane. The military statement said a child survived the crash in Port Sudan, a city located on the Red Sea. The military blamed a technical failure for the crash. Al-Tahir Abdul Rahman, the Secretary of Finance Minister Gabriel Ibrahim, was among the dead, according to the minister, who mourned his death on social media. Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces have been battling for control of the country in the capital Khartoum and elsewhere since April 15th. Port Sudan has largely been spared from the bloodshed. The sprawling region of Darfur has seen some of the worst bouts of violence in the conflict as the fighting has taken on ethnic dimensions. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is set to travel to Russia for the second Russia-Africa summit on the 27th and 28th of July. The visit comes soon after a series of controversy in which South Africa was under pressure to arrest Russian President Vladimir Putin if he were to attend the BRICS summit in August. While in Russia, Ramaphosa will hold meetings with Putin. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
A statement from the South African government states that during the summit, Ramaphosa and other African heads of state who are part of the African Leaders' Peace Mission aimed at ending the Russian war in Ukraine, will hold talks with President Putin. Ramaphosa will also engage his Russian counterpart to finalize the contents and substance of the BRICS summit scheduled to take place in South Africa in August. South Africa has been under immense pressure to arrest President Putin after Pretoria indicated he was amongst those invited to attend the BRICS summit, despite the International Criminal Court's warrant of arrest on him for his role in the war in Ukraine. A local court has ordered that President Putin be arrested if he comes to South Africa. Amnesty International is amongst many human rights groups that have welcomed the court order. This is what Shenila Mohammed, Amnesty International South Africa Executive Director, told VOA.
South Africa needs to continue leading in the fight for international justice for all victims of crimes under international law. International mechanisms such as the International Criminal Court, as well as domestic efforts of states like South Africa, are essential for truth, justice, and reparations for victims of grave crimes everywhere.
The South African government has now undertaken to implement the warrant of arrest, but Russia has already indicated that President Putin will not attend in person. Democratic Alliance Party leader John Steenhuisen has also celebrated the success in blocking Putin from coming to South Africa.
Well, I think it's great news for South Africa because it averts a potential international crisis that would have had a reverberation onto the domestic situation in South Africa. We're obviously very pleased Mr. Putin won't be here. Obviously, less than pleased that government equivocated for so long around what its position would be in upholding its international obligations in terms of the Statute of Rome and the domesticated version of it.
South Africa said in a statement the Russia-Africa summit aims to bolster cooperation and partnership between Russia and Africa. Security, politics, trade, and the fight against terrorism are some of the areas to be discussed. Ramaphosa will be accompanied by two ministers to Moscow. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuzo Kumalo.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Cameroon's President Paul Biya has ordered the demolition of poorly constructed illegal houses in the port city of Douala, the country's largest city and economic hub. The order came after a four-year story building collapsed onto a smaller one yesterday, killing at least 33 people, including four children. Rescue workers are still digging through the rubble in hopes of finding survivors. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Douala, Cameroon.
Scores of rescue workers and military troops use spades to dig through the wreckage of a collapsed four-story building Monday in Douala, Cameroon's economic capital. Military bulldozers carry the dumb scattered pieces of the building onto an empty space near scores of onlookers. Lieutenant Colonel Abdel Kadri is one of the commanders of the firefighting department of Cameroon's military. He's supervising operations they hope will be for rescues and not just recovering bodies.
Il est à signaler simplement que le bâtiment R+4 était en état vétuste.
Kadri says the building was in an advanced state of degradation before it collapsed Sunday at about 1 a.m. local time. He says the collapsed building no longer constitutes a threat to its neighbors. The apartment building, which authorities estimate housed 160 people, collapsed onto a two-story one next to it that housed another 60. Samuel Dieudonné Ivaha Dibua is the governor of Cameroon's littoral region where Douala is located. He says the hope of finding survivors lessens by the hour.
We want to tell the population that 31 people are in the hospitals, and the military and also gendarmes are working to make sure that there is nobody remaining inside. So the military, they are still working, and we are sure that they are going to make effort to finish the work today or tomorrow.
Dubois said the injured are being treated at Douala's Lakintini and Dedo hospitals. Monday, the government said President Paul Biya dispatched a delegation led by Cameroon's Housing and Urban Development Minister to Douala to oversee demolition of unsafe housing. The collapse came as Douala's city council has been trying to demolish unsafe buildings in high-risk zones for floods or landslides. The council and Cameroon's housing ministry last year reported more than 500 buildings in high-risk zones were in danger of collapse. Authorities ordered owners to either reinforce or demolish their buildings, but Douala's City Council reports fewer than 40 were repaired and none have been destroyed. Council officials say the building that collapsed early Sunday was not one of those marked for demolition. Edward Mfor is a member of the Cameroon Civil Society Group and a building contractor. He blames what he describes as a lack of respect by authorities for building safety standards.
The city like Douala is supposed to be well planned so that each one knows that this area is good to construct or not, or these are areas where we have floods or landslides. That information is not available. Normally, there's supposed to be some geotechnical survey approved by the state before you carry out story buildings. That is not done. Everybody's just doing what he or she wants to do, and then these are the resultant effect like what just happened.
Cameroon's government has not responded to allegations that it does a poor job of policing standards in building construction. In June, the government issued a public warning to beware of poor quality cement and iron rot being sold in the country. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Douala, Cameroon.
Mine clearing and other work is underway to open up wildlife passages so about 10,000 elephants that fled to Botswana to escape fighting in Angola can return home. These emerged during talks between the country's two leaders in the Botswana capital over the weekend. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mukandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi says it is an opportune time for the elephants, which left Angola at the height of its 27-year civil war, to go home. Masisi says Angola embarked on a $60 million exercise to remove landmines in the southern parts of the country, making it safer for the animals to return.
The clearing of landmines in Angolan territory that has been inaccessible to both people and wildlife will spur economic activity and free movement of wildlife, especially the elephants that are going home to Angola from Botswana. This will also lessen human-wildlife conflict and the burden on the habitat in places such as the Chobe National Park and other areas in Botswana.
Elephants have an incredibly long memory, and a recent project by the non-profit Elephants Without Borders indicates some of the animals in Botswana have started retracing their steps back to Angola. Angola's president, João Lourenço, says the elephants' return will help rebuild this country's elephant population and boost tourism.
The time has come for us to receive these our elephants, as we may say, so that they can go back to their habitat, to Yandoriana and Mavinga, obviously with the help of Botswana experts who will help us open up the roads in order to take those animals back to the natural habitat, which is...
Angola's elephant population dropped from an estimated 100,000 to just 10,000 due to the civil war that went on from 1975 to 2002. Lourenço was on a three-day state visit to Habrone as part of an effort to strengthen ties between Angola and Botswana. For VOA, this is Mgondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
The second increase in petrol price since President Bola Tinubu's government eliminated the national subsidy took Nigerians by surprise last week and sent transport fares, food prices, and the general cost of living rise too.
Commuters and motorists say they are frustrated over the latest price hikes. Petrol went from about 71 to 82 cents per litre. Food and transport prices are also climbing. Several people we spoke to who do not want their last names used for fear of reprisals from authorities call the situation unfortunate. Public servant Ladi is one of them.
Sincerely, the increment is really posing a lot of challenges, especially in my own home. In fact, we have to cut down everything that is affecting the quality of life in my home. We cannot afford the kind of meal we eat. Even the children are feeling the pulse.
Tokbe, a commercial driver, says he cannot make a profit with the current high prices.
I can say that government is not fair to us. I pray that God will touch their hearts to live up to the expectation by considering the masses, because the thing is biting harder.
Business owner Gerald, who is outraged over the higher prices, says crime will be on the rise if nothing is done to help the masses.
If you go to the street, you see a lot of persons trekking. If you just look at the society right now, everybody is confused. We don't know what to do. We don't know where to go. We don't even have hope.
The Independent Marketers Association of Nigeria says the increase in crude oil prices on the international market and a hike in the exchange rate are the reasons for the fuel price hikes. Some public offices and the College of Education Academic Staff Union have instructed employees to work only 2 days per week. Teacher Akin with the Federal College of Education says the hardship may lead to civil unrest if not handled well.
Life is not easy with this fuel increment. Whenever transportation fare is high, everything will go up. So I have to, as a man, as a husband, as a father to the children, I have to buckle up again to meet the challenges, because it's not easy.
Many Nigerians are pleading with state and national officials to quickly increase the minimum wage to reduce poverty and prevent an increase in crime. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
And now for some sports news. The Women's World Cup is rolling. The exciting games that are being played in New Zealand and Australia have all football fans around the globe ecstatic. Here with me in studio is my colleague and sports analyst, Mokbili Abaro. Glad to have you here, Mokbili.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So firstly, let's go into what do you predict that has the best possible chance to win this year's Women's World Cup?
I would obviously say the back-to-back champs, the U.S. side, are the obvious favorites. But the other teams that I would have to mention are Germany, Japan, Brazil, and Spain. They all came out swinging. Germany beat Morocco 6-0. Japan beat Zambia 5-0. Brazil beat Panama 4-0. And Spain also won 3-0 against Costa Rica. So I would have to choose those few teams.
And next, Mokbil, what are your thoughts on the African teams that have made it into the tournament?
The four African teams are Nigeria, South Africa, Zambia, and Morocco. Nigeria tied 0-0 with the Olympic champions, Canada, which was not a bad result for them at all. But the rest of the African teams unfortunately lost. South Africa, to me, was sadly the biggest disappointment, because they went up 1-0 against Sweden, which is a very strong team. But then they let the Swedes back in and they scored two to beat them 2-1. And then lastly, we've seen Zambia and Morocco, as we mentioned earlier, losing to both Japan and Germany 6-0 and 5-0 apiece.
Any breakout players to watch in this Women's World Cup?
If I were to have to choose, I would start with Alex Morgan from the U.S. side. She scored 121 goals for the national side and is probably on the top of the list for the Golden Boot. But Sophia Smith is a young star for the American side that has scored already twice in her first game against Vietnam when they won 3-0. Also, I would pick Rachel Daly from England and Alex Popp from Germany, just to name a few.
Our sports analyst, Mokbili Abaro, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.